Blog Talk Radio.
Think you know T-Mobile's coverage? Think again, Atlanta. We've doubled our 4G LTE in the ATL in the last year. Plus, with our new extended range LTE, your signal goes two times farther and is four times better in buildings than before. So you're covered inside and outside the perimeter. Now nobody covers Atlanta better. Nobody. What are you waiting for? Switch to T-Mobile or call 1-800-T-Mobile today.
Capable device required. Coverage not available in some areas. See T-Mobile store for details.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Parenting Aces radio show on Blog Talk Radio's UR Tennis Network. I'm your host, Lisa Stone, and I'm so excited to have Erica Perkins-Jasper with us today. She's coming at us live from the NCAA Division I Championships in Tulsa and has taken a break from the nail-biter action. I mean, seriously, nail-biter action going on out there. So I'm really happy that she's here. We are pre-taping the show, so if you're listening to this and are hearing results, that's why. We are taping a couple days ahead of schedule just because Erica is swamped with the NCAAs and her work as the COO of the ITA. So I don't want to waste any more of her time. Let me bring Erica on the line. Erica, thank you for taking a break from all this phenomenal tennis and being with us.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm really excited to be on the show. It's been a little while, and it's been something you and I have always talked about, so I'm glad we're finally getting it done.
Absolutely. I know. I love having you on, and you've had a crazy year transitioning into your COO position with ITA, and I just feel like all of us are so lucky to have you there. And
That's so nice.
Well, it's so true. And, I mean, there's already amazing stuff going on at the ITA this year with you and Tim Russell at the helm. And I just feel like there's so many other positive changes on the horizon, which we'll touch on a little bit later. But for now, I want to talk about the NCAAs and Tulsa and what you're seeing and how the energy is there. I know you guys, and I don't know what your role is in this or ITA's role is in this. There's been a little bit of wonkiness with the live streaming, a little bit of frustration, but thank God for Twitter is all I have to say.
There you go. And Bobby Knight is an animal right now out there. So,
yeah. And I keep tweeting out, follow Bobby.
And he really is doing a good job. No, the NCAAs in some ways is really fun for us. I was joking with our director of championships, Corey Brooks, today that it's not our tournament. So it's probably the one time where we kind of get to sit back and fully enjoy the tennis. When you're running your own championships, there are moments where you're enjoying the tennis, but you're next usually thinking about the next thing that's got to happen or, you know, something else that's going on or your problem solving or whatnot. So it's been quite enjoyable for me, to say the least. And, you know, I know there's been some challenges with the live scoring and some things. And the only thing is I've been part of many, many events and many tournaments. And unfortunately, it's a little bit Murphy's Law is, you know, it's always at a big tournament that the lights will go out or the power doesn't work or the scoreboards go down. And I think we've been a little bit unlucky these last few days, but hopefully they can get that going because, you know, I really think live scoring, live streaming really is great for our sport. And it lets everybody at home see how awesome college tennis is. And for people who haven't been watching, you know, the last – well, now 3 days have been absolutely amazing. I mean, I've been coming to NCAA championships since I was a player, so that would put us back maybe 1999. Everyone else can do the math right now, how old I am. But, but you know, I think the last 3 days have been some of the most exciting tennis that I've ever seen so far, and we're only probably a third of the way through today.
Yeah, and lots of, you know, tight contests, ending 4-3, lots of tiebreak matches. It's crazy. I'm just following Bobby right now, and I'm sorry if I sound distracted, but But Stanford and Michigan are in a tie break to clinch the match for a berth in the semis, and it's 5-3 Stanford right now, and it's just crazy, and Bobby's tweeting out point by point, thank goodness. But anyway, and I know you've got screens up and watching it too. So
exactly. You get very good in my job of working on emails and documents, but also keeping the live scoring or the Twitter feed up to maintain the eye on the tennis at all times.
Yeah, well, you know, priorities.
Right?
So, yeah, for sure. So what is the ITA's role at the NCAA championships? I mean, you mentioned this isn't y'all's tournament. Y'all have your own championships. You have your indoor tournament and various other tournaments throughout the year. This one belongs to the NCAA. What does that mean to the ITA in terms of what your role is there?
Well, we have a wonderful partnership with the NCAA, and at the Division I level, it's fairly cool because we work hand-in-hand with them with our rankings, and they utilize our rankings and also the results entry portal to do selections. So actually when the NCAA Tennis Committee was doing the selection, two members of our staff went out to Indianapolis to assist with that and run the various reports that they asked for, and all kinds of complicated things that are Excel spreadsheets that I don't always understand because I have a degree in history and not math. But so we have kind of that partnership with them. Obviously, I think you're aware that we now have taken over the certification and education process for our ITA officials starting this next academic year. So on my end, I've been meeting with some of our officials who are on our official task force, getting to know some of our top officials in the country who are working this event. And then we utilize this opportunity, and, you know, Lisa, you've been out to a couple different NCAA Division I championships. This tournament attracts a lot of coaches, obviously the ones that are here coaching their teams, the ones that are here coaching their individual players in singles and doubles, but a lot of coaches just come out, even if they don't have a team or a player. So we use this opportunity to have a coaches meeting, which we'll have on Tuesday. And actually, prior to that, we bring together our operating committee, and we've got a big meeting on Monday. So it's pretty fun in that, I kind of said, it's not our tournament, so we do get to enjoy the tennis part, but we do manage to keep ourselves busy by kind of capitalizing on the awesome momentum that exists to this tournament and the partnership we have with the NCAA to have these times to meet with our coaches and also with our officials.
That's fantastic, and I know, I mean, just from being at previous events, that you guys are busy the whole time. You're in meetings, you're schmoozing with all the people you need to schmooze with, and you're, you know, overseeing things, and so your role is definitely very important, even though your name's not on the event. So
exactly.
I know that, yeah. That's tough, but Stanford
well,
just
one of
won.
My, oh, go ahead.
Sorry, Stanford just won. That's just crazy. So go ahead. You were going to say one of your.
Oh well, you know, I think one of the things with Tim being in his first year and myself also being in my first year in this job is this tournament's a good opportunity for us to just talk to people. You know,
right.
The nice thing about coaches and, you know, having been a Division I college coach, I think in particular the coaches are very open with their feedback with me, both positive and negative. But it's actually a really good opportunity because we're kind of at that end point in the season where people have a complete feel for kind of maybe what we're trying to do, some changes we're trying to make, the direction we're going, some creative ideas they might have. So that's been a real fun part of this event as well, is actually – sitting down and having some of those conversations and having the time to do so.
I think it, you know, would be nice if you would explain to our listeners, which, you know, are mostly parents of juniors and most
yep.
of whom are aspiring to play college tennis, what exactly ITA's role is in the college tennis arena. I mean, you are a coaches organization, but you also spread your wings beyond just the coaches. And like
exactly.
you said, y'all are now going to be training and certifying the officials. What else is the ITA responsible for? Or, you know, what is y'all's role in the whole big picture of college tennis?
Gotcha. So our previous executive director, David Benjamin, who you know well, the tagline he kind of used for the ITA, and if you would have gone to our website, you know, 7-8 months ago, it still said this is kind of the ITA, the governing body of college tennis, because our role is so all-encompassing. We are a coaches organization, but we're kind of a coaches organization plus. We run a pretty extensive list of championships, so anything from sanctioned individual tournaments in the fall and a few in the spring to our 80-plus regional championships that are at all divisions, all our national championships, anything from the individual events in the fall to our team indoor championships at the D1 and D3 level in the spring. So championships are a big thing that we do in competitive opportunities. That obviously feeds into results entry and rankings. And, you know, as I said before, at the Division I level, where we have a computerized ranking, we actually work hand-in-hand with the NCAA in sharing that data and sharing those rankings. So, you know, that's another big thing. And then something that I think is really special that the ITA does that probably in the past we haven't done a great job publicizing is we have a very extensive awards program. So every division – and depending on the division, there's a certain number of regions. Let's say, for example, in Division I, it's probably on my mind because I've been working on it the last couple hours, but we have 12 different regions. And so on the men's and women's side, every region has 7 or 8 different playing and coaching awards that we give out. And then we also give out national awards at each divisional level. So in terms of, it's probably one of the most extensive awards programs in the country, and then we also have a really extensive academic awards program, and so student athletes who earn a 3.5 or above can get recognition as ITA scholar athletes. If a team's GPA, and that's all the players who are letter winners that year, have a GPA of a 3.2 or above, we have a ITA all-academic team award that we give out. So those are probably the big three that come to mind. The addition of the officials really highlights as well. We do a lot of our own governance. We have our own rule book that before used to be housed within the USTA Credit Court. It's now its own separate rule book that really covers all the rules that are different for college tennis, which I don't know how familiar everyone is, but you wouldn't think there's that many differences. You probably name 5 or 6. It's about 50 or 60 pages worth of differences and things that are a little bit unique to college tennis. Yeah.
I didn't know that either.
I mean, fresh on the brain.
Wow.
Yeah. When we put the new rule book out in September, I'll send you a copy, Lisa, so you can be up on it.
Okay.
And then obviously in probably July and August, we'll start doing certification webinars for our officials and also start that process. So that keeps me out of trouble on a daily basis and most of our staff. but in terms of division, that kind of, I think, should give you an idea of kind of the wealth of things that we're doing.
Right. And just to clarify, I mean, you guys are not in the business of training college coaches or certifying college coaches. That is a whole separate entity, and those coaches are trained and certified through the same organizations as any coaches, correct?
Yeah, so tennis is a little interesting in the United States is that there's a couple different organizations that do coaching certification. So it really is a matter of preference. There's a number of – we partner really well with both PTA and PTR. A number of our coaches are members of one or the other, sometimes both. You've got the ITPA that Mark Kovacs has that's more of a performance-based, curriculum. I would say this is through our coaches' convention – we do a lot of coaching education during that time in December, and traditionally we've done some continuing education for our coaches throughout the year. For me, being a former coach, that's an area that I would like us to grow. I think that's one where we have a lot of potential to help our coaches do their jobs better and also help facilitate the sharing of information. You know, one of the things that's challenging with coaches is I was one of them. We're all very competitive and, you know, but realizing that actually sharing information and sharing best practices is really great for everyone. And honestly, it helps make our sport and in particular college tennis stronger, the better job every coach and every program is doing. So I would say that's an area where we can continue to grow. But we don't have any plans right now, probably because we just don't have enough bodies to do anything more as is. But that's
right.
Not an area that we're going to dive into in terms of actual certification.
Got it. And I know, I mean, you guys put out publications, and I know the coaches themselves have a pretty tight-knit brotherhood/sisterhood among them. And, you know, if you go to a national tournament where college coaches are watching matches, you see the coaches standing together and laughing and trading information and helping one another. And I mean, I know of countless situations where a coach is looking at a potential recruit and another coach who might know that recruit well will interact and, you know, share information on them. And I mean, I think in that regard, you know, that's a really cool thing that happens at the collegiate level that you don't see as much at the junior level. But, you know, I think it's interesting for my listeners to understand that it's not ITA's job to certify these men and women that are coaching at the collegiate level. They are, you know, going elsewhere to get that certification, but you guys are working to keep them up to speed on best practices, like you said, and other things that are going on in the industry, which I think is great. One of my favorite things that you do, and I've written about it a bunch of times and just wrote about it again, is the ITA Summer Circuit. And y'all have expanded it this year pretty significantly. And I think last year maybe was the first year you guys kind of partnered with UTR a bit and worked with them in terms of seating and, I don't know, player selection so much. But can you talk a little bit about what's going on with the Summer Circuit, what the goals are for that, who should be playing, and all of those things?
Absolutely. So the Summer Circuit is a really cool program that was started by the ITA. And Lynn Loring, who is a longtime women's coach at Indiana, this was kind of his baby for a long time. And this last summer, Betsy Kuehl, who just retired as the women's coach at Western Michigan last summer, she kind of took over in that circuit chair role. And with Tim and I getting on the team, we had a lot of conversations with Betsy and Corey, also our director of championships, on what are some ways that we could modernize the summer circuit? Because in a lot of ways, we added a few regions of the circuit, but the circuit looked pretty much the same, I know, from when I played in college, which, as established earlier in the conversation, is not that recent. So, you know, how do we provide more value for the players playing the event? How do we grow them? How do we had a ton of coaches who were interested in hosting and just didn't know how. So we made the decision that we were kind of going to de-regionalize and think of it more as a week-by-week schedule over 6 weeks, and that we were going to open up the application process to host, which was really big for our coaches. I think there was just some lack of communication in the past on how to be able to host them. But what the events are themselves is they're basically open tournaments in the summer that we obviously facilitate on college campuses to give student-athletes and prospective student-athletes, frankly, the opportunity to play and compete. Because reality says, you know, the top 1% of college tennis players are going to play pro circuit events, but the rest of the players are really looking for playing opportunities. And, you know, I was very fortunate when I was a junior player and that I grew up in the Pacific Northwest, which has a really competitive and fun open series of tournaments. But open tournaments are tough to find in the U.S. And so in a lot of ways, this really addresses the need for the rest of college tennis. It's an unbelievable opportunity for juniors because we know how junior players, when they get to about 15 or 16, they get a little tired of junior tennis tournaments. So giving them a little variety, a chance to, you know, kind of compete against some college players and some older players, make those connections. So it's a pretty neat circuit that we feel like has a ton more potential. So I think we made a nice step this summer to grow it. And from there, you know, I think the sky could be the limit. In terms of partnering with UTR, they're unbelievable partners of ours. I think on a personal level, I've been a huge fan of UTR. Gosh, now it's going on a number of years back when Dave Howell kind of got started. But it's a really great system for tournaments like this that have a ton of college players and junior players. It's always very difficult to seed a tournament like that because there's no universal ranking or rating. And so UTR has really provided that. So we worked closely with them last summer, and they actually did a lot of the seedings for the tournament. We'll have those same rules in place for our tournament directors this summer that they'll need to utilize UTR to seed the tournament. And the feedback from the tournament directors, and having been a tournament director, it's pretty accurate, and it's a great way to seed a tournament with players coming from kind of all levels all into one. So it's been fun, and I'm really excited at the growth we're having this summer. And, you know, I think our staff is a little apprehensive, but excited as well.
Well, I think it's great. And y'all are doing this great championships at the end of the summer, which you've always done, but the path is a little bit different this year than it has been in the past. And I alluded to that in my article and added the link to the championships page. So hopefully my listeners, if you didn't read it yet, you'll go on parentingaces.com and take a look at that. I can tell you just from personal experience, my son started playing ITA Summer Circuit when I think the summer after ninth grade was his first summer. And it's just a phenomenal series of events. I mean, even if you just play one of them as a younger high school student, to be able to see where your game is versus existing college players is hugely valuable. And, you know, for the college players themselves, it's a fun way to get out there and, you know, just get a little extra competition during the summer. And I'm just a big fan.
And the scheduling is really good for those tournaments too, in that I think where it really appeals to, say, the college players is most of them run Friday through Sundays or Saturday through Mondays. They're usually only 3 days. So if you have a job or you're doing summer school, which a lot of our student athletes are, they still can get out and play a lot of tennis over that 3-day window, which is huge.
Exactly. And I was going to say that too. And I think I said that in my article that, you know, especially after having gone through a year of college and seeing the stress that these kids are under, it's nice for them to have something a little bit different to look forward to during the summer.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, I'll tell you this, one of my favorite memories, I actually took a summer off playing the Pacific Northwest Circuit and went down to LA and played 3 of the tournaments down there and basically lived out of my car with housing in Southern California with one of my college teammates. And we did pretty well on the tennis court, but just the experience of it was a tremendous fun experience. And I feel like the summer circuit has a real soft spot for the summer circuit because of that, you know. And I think to your point, college tennis players can get pretty stressed out. School is challenging. The season is so competitive. This is a great way for them to keep up their tennis, but in a real kind of fun and relaxed environment.
Yeah, and I know a lot of the kids do exactly what you said. They get together with one or two other teammates or maybe even buddies from home, you know, who aren't going to their same school, and hop in the car and travel together and, you know, find a place to stay. And, you know, they have that independence, so there aren't a lot of parents around, which is, I'm sure, also a very big perk for the kids as well as for the tournament officials and the tournament directors. And they're happy to have a break from us parents as well. But so it's, you know, it's cool for the kids. And as a parent going to watch my kid when he was in high school, it was really fun for me too, because you see that school spirit and it really gets you excited about what's coming in terms of, you know, the kids' college or tennis development. So that's really fun.
It's probably fun to see too that in 4 years, like, you know, you were probably looking at some of these kids who are freshmen and sophomore going, wow, my son is going to be fully independent with his tennis. You know, it's fun to see the college kids, how they've made that transition and the tennis becomes theirs, you know, and I think that's a really big step. And as a junior tennis parent, I am not a junior tennis parent. I have a 2- and a 4-year-old, so maybe that'll be my future, maybe
not. It's coming.
But
it's coming.
But I think, I'm sure sometimes parents wonder, oh my gosh, is this ever going to end? Am I always going to be worried about the tennis part? And it's probably awesome to see the college players and see the independence that they grow during that experience.
For sure. For sure. Or, you know, it's a little worrisome too. Some of it, but it's a little scary. But for the most part, everything that I've seen at those events has been very positive and actually incredibly well-behaved players. It's kind of interesting to notice that, you know, when there aren't so many parents around, the kids really do seem to step it up in terms of their on-court attitudes. You see very few challenged calls. It's just a different environment. So, highly, highly recommend it for those of you thinking about it, or maybe your kid has a hole in their schedule for the summer and you're looking for some things to do tennis-related. This is a great thing to do. The entry fees are really low. You know, you get great competition, and like Erica said, the events last 3 days, most of them. So it's a quick in and out, and very, very fun. And they do have a back draw. Most of them have a back draw anyway, and they are singles and doubles, which is great.
Exactly. We try to make it pretty user-friendly in that you enter the tournament that's going to pay for your singles and your doubles, and that, yeah, you're going to get a back draw in singles and doubles, barring any rainouts or anything like that.
Yeah, it's awesome. All right, so let's move on.
Well, and one thing too is I think, you know, parents, you know, and Lisa, you and I have had this conversation a number of times as we kind of discussed the transition from junior tennis to the recruiting process to actually going to college tennis. But for me, you know, there's always a hesitancy for the junior player, the junior parent, because we're chasing points and we're working on rankings. But I think one of the things with being partnered with UTR and, you know, they utilized a lot of the results from the summer circuit last summer, is that college coaches are looking at UTR, and so you have these great results against college players. It can positively affect your UTR. You've got the results then that are actually in the database. It actually can help you in the recruiting process too, which is, you know, a really good thing, and I think something that's huge for us.
Yeah, and there are coaches that come out to watch these matches. I mean, it's,
yeah,
you know, the coaches understand the importance too. So there's that piece. Sorry, I am still recovering from this respiratory thing. So I keep muting myself to cough and sneeze and anyway. Okay, so tell me what else is in the works. I know you guys are, you know, meeting all the time, and I'm constantly getting these little hints of great things that are on the horizon with the ITA. Spill it. Let's hear what's coming.
So, you know, and for those of you who do know Tim Russell really well, and Tim's somebody who's been kind of affiliated with the tennis world, both the junior tennis world and the college tennis world, for a number of years. And I've worked closely with him on and off from my experience when I was working for the USTA. And one thing about Tim is, Tim doesn't like to do anything without a plan, and in particular, a very organized strategic plan. So that's been one of the things that we've been working on, and I'll be unveiling to some of our coaches this week in Tulsa. But kind of number one on the list is taking what we've currently always done. And I think this last year, sometimes if I was, let's make sure everything is supposed to get done, gets done. But honestly, enhancing and building on what we're currently doing. And, you know, if we're, say, hosting the D3 women's team indoors, taking a look at that event, it's an awesome event, but how can in 2017 we make it better? Better student-athlete experience, better for our coaches, how can we get fans out watching this awesome tennis, et cetera. So that's kind of number one. Number two, I think, you know, Tim has a lot of vision on the fact that college tennis is actually bigger than just maybe what you do on the tennis court. And so I think, one, telling the story, and that's not just telling the story about the matches, but it's, you know, the players behind the matches, it's the coaches. And so we just announced a new partnership with Flow Sports, which is a streaming company that has an emphasis on Olympic sports. And they'll be starting a Flow Tennis channel, and we'll be tied in. They'll be covering all of our national championships, as well as some additional events, as well as doing Flow Films. I think we have 10 different ones that they'll be putting together. So that's an exciting one in terms of telling the story and hoping, you know, hopefully building some more relevance and excitement around college tennis. I think Tim also has a real vision in terms of the community aspect with college tennis and finding better ways to serve our communities that we're in and serve our campuses and just have a bigger impact across the board. So that would probably be kind of moving more into our bigger outside-the-box ideas and some creative ways, frankly, to preserve and promote our programs. Because at the end of the day, obviously, here's the deal. 50% of the teams win, 50% of them lose. But how do we make sure that 100% of them are having a tremendous impact? So that's kind of where some new ideas and discussions are going. And then, you know, as kind of a leadership team, finding ways to promote and grow our brand, and that includes, you know, looking into different sponsorships and partnerships in the future. You know, one of our best tournaments is the National Indoors in the fall, and we have a wonderful sponsorship with the USTA, and they make that tournament first rate. And when the student athletes come in, it feels like they're coming to a pro event. Those are the kind of strategic partnerships and sponsorships that we want to continue to grow so we can make sure we do that for all our events. So that's kind of where we're going. No, I think it's great. And that's, you know, honestly, one of the things that I look at when I'm following these various tennis teams on Twitter or on other social media is what are they doing off the court? You know, what types of interactions are they having with their community? What types of introductions is tennis providing to the teammates so that they have connections when they graduate for jobs? And, you know, what kind of community service are they engaging in? And I think it's really an overlooked aspect of college tennis, and maybe, like you said, one that hasn't gotten enough promotion, but really should, because, I mean, we all understand the odds of making it as a professional tennis player on the circuit. And so for most of the kids that are going to play college tennis, whichever division they're going to play, the goal should be, you know, educating the whole person and not just making them better tennis players, but getting them ready to be productive human beings out in the world when they finish. And I think the coaches that take on that responsibility really stand out, and there are some incredible ones out there, you know, and I would love to see ITA highlight that more. I think it's an important piece of the whole story.
Absolutely, and, you know, it's really highlighting the coaches that are already doing an amazing job. And then also for us, you know, we've got to step it up in helping coaches, basically teaching people how to fish. Some coaches don't even know where to mm-hmm. start. And so helping create something that's a little more systematic. So you're a brand new coach in a new community, and you kind of know the five steps you need to take to get engaged in that community. And, you know, here are the folks you should be reaching out to. Here's the kind of partnerships that are going to be really beneficial. You know, these are the kind of match promotions you should be doing. You know, the list goes on and on. We need to continue to help our coaches with that stuff, because we can't assume that everybody right. knows how to do that perfectly. You know, there's some great personalities out there that are wonderful promoters of the game. Not everybody comes by that naturally. And so how do we help our coaches do a better job in that area? Because, you know, frankly, in my experience, and we talk about college tennis programs and sometimes being endangered or budgets being cut or even, you know, even worse, programs being cut. In my experience, when programs have really, you know,
been embedded in the campus and the community, and you've got a coach who's very, very active and well supported, you know, that program's name is not on the list of ones that we want to cut scholarships or cut budgets or even cut the program. And so, you know, that's one where we can really help strengthen college tennis by being proactive on our end.
I agree. I think it would be phenomenal. And I, you know, there, like I said, there are some coaches that I follow on social media, and I'm just blown away at how creative they get in terms of getting their players out there, getting their program out there, and garnering that support in the community. And it's huge. I mean, it makes a huge difference in terms of the stability of the program, but it also makes a huge difference in how the individual players feel about their team and their school and their coach. And, you know, I don't think I speak for everybody, but I think I speak for a lot of parents in that, you know, our hope as a parent is that our child's college coach is going to continue to be an important part of their lives forever moving forward. You know, I want my child's college coach to be at his wedding, to be, you know, present when the child is graduating from high school or getting married, you know, and I have this fantasy about that happening. And there are a lot of coaches out there that do exactly that with their former players. And to me, those are the ones to really, you know, encourage to share their MO with the rest of the coaching community.
Absolutely.
So here's another thing that has come up during these NCAAs. I kind of had a back and forth with Bobby and with Granger about this a couple days ago.
Oh, this should be good. Okay, I'm excited.
I know. Are there any plans for the ITA or somebody to develop a college tennis app?
Yes. That is something
she says sheepishly.
Without going into too much detail about my day-to-day existence. Yes, absolutely.
Okay,
so from a leadership perspective, we came in and there's a lot of existing contracts that existed within the ITA. We realized that there are some challenges with our results entry and rankings portal and things that could make the ITA more exciting, more relevant, easier to follow, all those things. So I will tell you that we are actively pursuing just that because it's 2016. Our goal would be a year from now to be much more up to speed with modern day technology. But frankly, it's taken a little while to take an inventory of exactly what we have and then also clearly define where we want to go. But yes, that's very high on Tim and my list.
Okay, good. I mean, I understand there are challenges with the NCAA and rights and this and that and the other thing. And that was kind of what kept coming up in the Twitter conversation that was going on. But, you know, it seems to me that with so many schools having their own apps and apps for their sports and apps for their tennis teams in particular, that there should be a central location for fans and parents and anybody else to, you know, be able to pull it up and see what's happening in the world of college tennis. I think that would be
so. I do not disagree with you.
Oh, good. Well, I'm glad to hear that. You know, we're usually on the same page, Erica, so
we are.
And, just to give my listeners a little background, too, I didn't mention this at the beginning, and I should have, but you come from a background, or part of your background was heading up the kind of college tennis piece at the USPA, and that's where you and I met. We met, I think we met at the NCAAs in Athens.
In Athens when I did a coaching education presentation. Gosh, that was 4 years ago, I believe. Does that seem right? Or is that longer ago?
I think maybe five because
five.
Yeah,
okay.
I think my kid was his freshman year of high school. So I think that's when it was. And he's just finished his freshman year of college. So, or not quite finished, but almost finished. soon.
Amazing, right? It doesn't seem like that was that long ago.
It doesn't. It really doesn't. But so, I mean, you have been in this role not only as a coach, but also from the education side and from the kind of governing body side for quite a while now. And you really have an understanding of the inner workings of the USTA, of the ITA, of the coaches themselves, of the schools themselves and athletic departments, you know, having coached yourself and having to deal with that, which really gives you incredible credentials for being in this role as the COO. And I just think we're all so lucky to have you there now and that you bring this type of experience with you. If you could say the one thing as a coach and as a former USTA person that is helping you in your role now with ITA, what would you say that is?
In terms of what has kind of had the impact, where I've had the impact, or like what my, sorry, I kind of missed that with the dog barking in the background.
So sorry. I won't no, even tell okay. you what that, what the dog situation is. I'll tell you offline.
Sorry about that.
What you have taken from your role as a coach and your role with the USTA that has had the most impact now that you're with the ITA?
Yeah, I mean, I think in some ways you kind of already touched on it in that it's sometimes just understanding how things work. And we've got a bunch of different organizations that all work very differently, yet we're all trying to go in the same direction. So having the understanding of how the USTA works and even how specifically maybe what the focus of USTA player development is versus USTA community tennis is pretty helpful for me. And obviously a lot of the relationships that I had when I worked there, a lot of those folks are still there. And so they usually still will take my calls on most days. But then also understanding that the focus of the coaches might be very different, and what the coaches want also could be very different from, say, what their athletic administrators want or their university presidents. And so kind of having a feel for maybe all three, the needs of the USTA as the governing body of tennis, the needs of kind of our institutions of higher education and athletic departments, and then what our coaches and players really need. I feel like a lot of times I'm doing a tap dance between all those different organizations and helping to find commonalities of where we can align and get behind something and work together. I would say that's probably always been one of my strengths, and it's kind of like problem solving. So I really, really enjoy that. But I mean, in some ways, probably what's helped me the most is frankly what I learned as a college tennis player is, you know, I've shared with you, Lisa, a number of times, I had this tremendous experience as a student athlete, and it really shaped who I was and built my confidence, built my self-esteem. And I realized, okay, whatever I really put my mind to and work hard and fight for, I can probably do. And if I come up a little short, I'll still surpass whatever anyone else's goals were for me. And so I would say in some ways the college tennis playing experience is probably the biggest gift I bring to this job every day. Is, you know, one, I think the lessons I learned, but then two, remembering that those 18 to 22-year-old student athletes, I still remember what that's like. And I also remember where they're going to go from there. And I think that's what excites me about going into work every day.
Well, I think that's a huge facet of it. And I, you know, that's where your youth is a huge asset. And, excuse me one second. Sorry. And the fact that you can remember that and you do have such strong memories of what it was like to be a player. And I mean, you and I have talked several times over the course of this year about issues that have gone on in my family. And, you know, you always say, well, when I played, and you really have, you know, extreme recall about that experience. And so, yeah, I didn't mean to overlook that piece of the puzzle when I was talking about the experience that you bring, because that's huge. And as a parent, to hear you say that, to hear you say that the confidence you gained during your college playing years has served you so well in your professional life, I mean, that's all we want, right?
Exactly. It really is. And I think that's what, you know, I think everybody's probably biased towards their own sport, but I would almost argue that the lessons learned playing tennis, but in particular college tennis, because of the team setting, but also the individual nature of, at the end of the day, it really is on you to get it done, so valuable. And I'd like to think that the student athletes that we produce in college tennis are the best ones out there, and they're going to be the most successful.
I've heard countless stories from parents who have told me that their kids who were playing college tennis were getting job offer after job offer, oftentimes not even for jobs that were related to their major, their course of study, simply because of the fact that they were a varsity athlete in college, and that employers are seeking these collegiate players. And I mean, we've seen several articles that have been published about how former Division I college players and even D2, D3 players have gone on to these phenomenal careers in finance and law and medicine. I mean, you name it. So I think that's huge. One of the things that is a little disturbing, and this is an article that I've been working on and trying to figure out how to finesse, but is that tennis does have a high transfer rate in college for some reason. And I really don't understand the why behind it. And I don't know if that's something that ITA is looking at and, you know, is maybe concerned with, or, I mean, the percentages are still low overall, and there aren't that many athletes that are transferring in any sport. But the fact that tennis is among the highest is, you know, a little disconcerting.
Yeah, and, you know, this is a tricky issue in that we do have some coaches who have, you know, expressed some concern, and obviously we've heard from parents and we can see the numbers. It's not something in particular that maybe we're attacking right now. As you can tell, we kind of have some really urgent big stuff going on. I do think it's something to keep an eye on. You know, and this is probably me taking my ITA hat off and speaking more as a former college coach. I still think the recruiting process can be a little challenging. And I think sometimes, and since we do have probably a lot of tennis parents, junior tennis parents who are listening today, I think sometimes the process gets a little bit rushed. And I think sometimes people are making decisions maybe on what they think is best, or maybe what everyone else might think is best for them and their family, and not really looking at the whole fit. You know, and that's been my experience. I've coached at a wide variety of institutions, anything from really academically elite institutions to large state schools, big schools, small schools. And there seems to be, in particular, I think, in the U.S., a little bit of an obsession with what's the best academic school with best reputation and best ranking that I can get into and get a scholarship or whatever it might be. And in my experience, both as a player and as a coach, that formula isn't always the best for making that selection. You know, it really is, where am I going to fit in the lineup? How do I get along with this coach? How do I get along with the players? Is the campus the right feel of campus for me? And so that would be my only encouragement, is the transfer for the poor fit. I feel like that number is a little bit high, and I think that's one where we could proactively help junior tennis players and their parents make better decisions. And I think, Lisa, you know, one thing when I was at the USTA that I was really passionate about was getting out and doing the education piece just about that. So that's what jumps out initially, is I think there's some proactive ways where we can help improve that. In my experience, I'm not sure, you know, everyone's had, you know, the coach and as a player, you've seen the negative experiences just as you have as a parent. But I've also seen the really positive transfer experiences as well. And So in some ways, I wouldn't want that to be hurt by anything. And so, you know, I had a student athlete at one of my past institutions, probably one of the greatest kids I've ever known, unbelievable student, hard worker. I ask her to do something, she's going to do it two times over. But, you know, she was number 7, just out of the lineup. This is a kid who loves to compete. And in some ways, she's a little bit unlucky. We got some good recruits in, some people improved and made that little bit of jump ahead of her. And as hard as she worked, she wasn't playing. And so we worked together, actually, and found her a school that was maybe just a little bit lower in the rankings where she could go in and play in the middle of the lineup and play singles and doubles every day. And I've watched her have, you know, a phenomenal career since then. So, like I said, it's a tricky issue, but I do think it's one to be aware of. And I think for junior parents and players to be aware of the transfer issue and maybe start asking the hard questions during the process to maybe avoid that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And I agree with you that, you know, transferring can oftentimes be a really positive thing, as I'm hoping it will be for my kids. But I suspect it will be. But there's still stress of going through it. You know, the stress of having to go through the process of recruiting all over again while in school full time, and you know, doing all the other things that these kids are expected to do. So, it's just one of those things that of course, it can't be avoided 100%. There are always going to be situations where things don't turn out as you thought they would. But I agree with you. I think that oftentimes the families especially are looking at the wrong thing. And sometimes even when you aren't looking at the wrong thing, you're looking at all the right things, it just turns out not to be the right fit, you know, for whatever reason.
Right.
So there are those situations as well, but this is again where I think UTR is really doing a favor to the junior tennis family and having all that data up there where you can go look at the team, you can look at the conference, you can look at their schedule from the previous year and look at the UTRs of all the players that they play against and figure out, am I going to be competitive at this level? And if I'm not, am I going to be okay with that? Am I going to be okay losing every match or sitting out because I don't make the cut? And, you know, these are all important pieces of the puzzle that we don't always consider. And, you know, another piece that was really interesting that somebody brought up to me, actually a college coach shared with me, was, you know, look at the schedule of the schools that you're looking at. Do they play a wide variety of teams across the country, or do they stay really close to home? That can sometimes be a telltale sign of what their budget constraints are. And, you know, if they're not traveling much, they may have a smaller budget, which can be reflected in things like how many pairs of shoes you get during the year or whether or not you get free equipment or, you know, what kind of travel arrangements are made when you do go off-road and that kind of thing. And so, you know, these are things that you don't really think about until you're forced to, I guess. And so maybe that can help save some, I won't say bad decisions, but decisions that might have been better.
Right. Maybe less informed decisions than we would prefer they be.
Exactly. But there's no guidelines. And that's part of the problem, I think, is, you know, everybody's experience is different. Everybody's got something different that they're looking for in a college tennis experience. And so, you know, it's tough to say if you do A, B, C, D, and E, you're going to make the right decision. That doesn't always happen. And, you know, as we all know, this is the time of year where, as Bobby Knight calls it, the coaching carousel is going on, where, you know, they're being coaches are changing and they're leaving jobs and new coaches are being brought in. And so, you know, you may commit with a certain coach, and then by the time you get there in the following fall, the coach may be gone, the assistant coach may be gone, and you just have no control over that. So there are just a lot of factors that go into making a good decision with your college choice. But you know, I would love to see ITA continue to educate and maybe work with USTA to continue to educate families on maybe some best practices in terms of recruiting. So it is such a big decision, you know, and especially for the boys where there's not as much scholarship money available. Oftentimes there's a financial burden on the family and, you know, it's better to make the best decision
up front. It makes it a little more tricky.
For sure, for sure. So, well, what else am I neglecting to ask you about that we need to talk about today? I feel like there's got to be more.
Dominated today.
Well, of course we have, because you know. well, are you there for the whole tournament? Are you going to be there through the individuals as well?
No, this is a pretty long week for me, and I think you know I have a wonderful, amazing husband, but after about a week of running around with two toddlers, I need to get home, so I still have a husband, so I'll go back after the team championships finishes. And we've had staff at the D2 championships last week, and then we actually had staff. We have staff going out to the D3 championships, so we're trying to kind of make sure we're getting out at all the different ones and seeing all our coaches and all our players. And then things will slow down in terms of travel for me for a little bit, and we can kind of work on completing the move to our new office, which is on the Arizona State campus, which is really, really cool. And the rest of our staff will be joining us throughout the month of June, and so it'll be just getting prepped and ready for the fall, which is in some ways, even though it's kind of I wouldn't say it's the less important part of the college tennis season, but to me the dual match is the heart and soul of the season. The fall is really the preparation for us on the ITA side. It ends up being our busiest part of the year, so a little bit of R&R and mental regeneration, hopefully, so we can really knock 16-17 out of the park.
That sounds great. I know your boys will be happy to have you back, all three of them. And
yes,
that'll be nice for you too. So, well, thank you, Erica, so much. I know you are crazy right now. So I value the time that you're able to give us. And I love having you as a resource. And to my listeners, if you guys ever have any questions about college tennis and you need an answer, you can feed it to me, and I'll call Erica, and I promise you, you will have an answer within 48 hours at the longest. She is killer at getting back in a timely manner, so thank you for that, and enjoy the rest of your time in Tulsa. I hope the weather holds out
for
you guys.
Thank you. It looks like it's still beautiful right now, so I'm going to crank out a little more work and sneak back to the courts, because you probably hit the nail on the head. At the end of the day, I'm pretty easy to get a hold of, and I love to answer questions about college tennis because other than my family, it's probably my favorite thing. So I'm pretty blessed to be able to do what I love every day.
That's fantastic. Well, thanks again for being with us, and have a great rest of the weekend, and I'm sure we'll chat soon.
All right. Thanks, Lisa.
Thank you.
Bye.
To my listeners, thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you've enjoyed the conversation with Erica. She really is a phenomenal resource. She has so much knowledge and so much experience in the world of college tennis. And I meant what I said. If you have questions about recruiting, about how things work at the collegiate level, if you want to shoot them to me, I'll be happy to forward them to Erica, and I promise you, you'll get an answer pronto. So hope you enjoyed the show. Have a great week, everybody, and we'll see you next time on Parenting Aces.
Think you know T-Mobile's coverage? Think again, Atlanta. We've doubled our 4G LTE in the ATL in the last year. Plus, with our new extended range LTE, your signal goes two times farther and is four times better in buildings than before. So you're covered inside and outside the perimeter. Now nobody covers Atlanta better. Nobody. What are you waiting for? Switch to T-Mobile or call 1-800-T-MOBILE today.
Capable device required. Coverage not available in some areas. See T-Mobile store for details.